Welcome to Traces of Trauma, where we explore the quiet echoes that trauma leaves behind and the gentle path of healing. I'm your host, Brian Arbour, inviting you to join me in conversations that honor our stories, our struggles, and the strength and grace it takes to move forward. This is a safe space to listen, reflect, and connect in the shared journey beyond our trauma. Welcome, everybody. And with us today is Stephen Stott. He's a connection through my good friend Jenny Bellinger, who was with us on the launch episode. Stephen has over 2 decades of experience guiding people in remembering who they are beneath their grief. He's a Columbia University School of Social Work alum who spent the last decade working with people through grief and trauma using psychotherapy. And all of that really changed when he became certified in somatic breathwork. He started Embrace the Darkness LLC and noticed that the breathwork allowed people to be with their grief without reliving the pain. Grief really isn't necessarily an illness that needs a cure, but rather a reminder of the special connection that we have with others and even with ourselves. So, thanks for joining us today, Stephen, and I can't wait to see what we get up to together.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on the show, and I'm getting goosebumps just hearing my own bio.
Awesome. That's how you know you're on the right path, yeah?
Definitely. I mean, I feel like I've been on a couple of other podcasts, and sometimes it's always like, all right, let me tweak this a little bit, and let me tweak this, and this sounds good, and this sounds good. But it's always that moment where it's like, oh, it's coming together. Like when I was writing it, I was like, oh, I have goosebumps. And then when you were just saying it, I was like, ooh, I'm getting goosebumps.
Nice. Awesome. So, there are so many different ways we could take this conversation today. Just from the little bit I know about you, it seems that you have your own history with trauma. I think everyone has some history with trauma. And rather than relating to trauma as the thing that happened, right? You relate to trauma as the residual effect. So there's an incident or a series of incidents or a bunch of unrelated incidents, and stuff gets stuck in us and gets shaped and sometimes permanently altered as a result of what happened to us. So that stuff that's altered, or maybe the thing that did the altering on the inside is the trauma. And getting at that trauma in on the internal rather than trying to forget or rewrite or reframe those histories sounds like that's at the core of what you do with the breath work. Tell me, what do you have to say about that? Am I close? Am I miles away? Fill us in a little bit.
So one of the individuals who's like an expert in trauma, Dr. Gabor Mate, he says that trauma isn't what happens to you. Trauma happens inside of you because of what happened to you. And so I think, therapy, life coaches, talking with friends and support groups, like these are all helpful ways to connect and not feel alone in your trauma or the things that you experience in life. One of the books that I read after grad school was The Body Keeps the Score. And I read that book in 2 days after, and being a self-proclaimed person, I don't like reading. I hate reading, blah, blah, blah. Because I feel like I'm slow. But this book, it was just like, it spoke to me. Even with that said, going through grad school and being a social worker, I've done a lot of psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, strengths-based, talking with people. And clicked for me when I was going through the certification for somatic breath work because I was like, oh, cool, this is another tool that I'm going to be able to support people with in a way where they're not going to have to talk about or necessarily relive their trauma. And so a part of my story going way back is with the death of my sister. So I was in the car accident where she died in August of 2002. And I did the support groups and went to grief and loss conferences and connected with other siblings, but there always felt like, or I felt different. Like I was connected with the other siblings with sibling loss, but there was still something that I didn't feel like I quite belonged. And I think a big part, and I always talk about this, is as a queer person of color, I knew I was different when I was a kid before my sister died. She was the first person that I told that I liked boys. But then I never really met other siblings who were queer and kind of in that same space. So there's all of this mix of not knowing who I was and trying to figure that out, but also the fear of death, because I think even where we are today in the world, there's immense fear and laws are being changed. And so that's causing additional trauma for a lot of people. And for me, I'm kind of like where I am, I don't feel like it impacts me as much as it does. But if we talk about a deeper level, I'm sure there are things there where it's like, there is more impact, but it's more like internal than it is actually, I guess, like a verbal thing, so to speak. So yeah, lots of things
And
there.
it's I've had several conversations since the launch episode, and one of the things that showed up for me in hearing from family and friends and people who listened to the episode was the way that trauma creeps forward and compounds. So that sense of not belonging, like identifying yourself as a queer person of color before anybody else knew, and that break in belonging and wondering like where you fit, and all of the examples of whatever it was like for you. I know for me there were plenty of examples of rejection, and there was a lot of fear, there was a lot of stigma around that community and the quality of life that was possible or not possible, and how the traces of that trauma interfered with feeling like you belonged in the lost siblings grief group. And so the trauma gets in the way of dealing with the other trauma, right? And there are our traumas aren't, well, they're not convenient. But they show up at the weirdest times in the quietest ways. And those things linger. I'm sure you don't walk around every day like dealing with a sense of not belonging and not feeling like you can be who you are with people, not anymore. But in that scenario, that thing crept in quietly, probably mostly unobserved, and influenced your ability to heal from what you were up against in the present.
No, I definitely felt disconnected most of my life, almost like present, but like not in my body. Even in grad school, when I was going to school to get my master's in social work, like I felt I was in New York City, so I was around a lot of more like queer people, and there was a queer caucus, and I joined it, but it always felt, I don't know if it was, I didn't feel like I felt like I belong more than I didn't feel connected to other people. Like there was still kind of like this wall up. And it wasn't until I moved to Florida. And so this is fast forward, right? I knew something was different when I was 8. I told my sister I like boys at 16. In some ways jokingly came out on her legacy page, which is, for people who don't know what that is, it's when someone dies, legacy page is somewhere where you can go on where you can just write messages to the person, like a website. And so I ended up writing a poem after graduation, and then at the end I put, by the way, I'm gay, Even though she already knew, it was like my way of telling everyone without having to individually tell people and come out and come out. So my mother called me that day, and she was like, "What did you do?" Because everyone was calling her saying, "Did you see what Steven wrote on the legacy page?" And she was like, "No." So she was all freaked out because everyone's calling her. And then she was like, "You little shit." I was like, that was just my way of doing it. But then again, fast forward until 29, it was like that was when I felt the most comfortable because I moved to Florida and I was in a queer community, like gay, lesbian, trans, going out to get drinks at like gay bars and just being around more gay people. And so it was like I felt more connected in my body because I found that community. And I think that's kind of sometimes our disconnect is finding people who are similar, but also the feeling, the different feelings, right? So when you feel disconnected, it's one feeling. Then when you feel connected, it's like, oh, like things just kind of go away on their own sometimes.
And in my experience, it's usually around places where I feel part of me might not be welcome. So I have to just tone it down or not offer that part of myself to preempt some kind of upset or rejection that I think is might be incoming. And I just don't even want to take the chance. Like, something's uncomfortable. I need to wall this part of myself off. And that break in connection, it has a huge impact. And whether it's being part of the queer community or whether it's the presence of grief and trauma that people just, we don't think they'll be able to handle, like they're tired of it. Shouldn't we be over it by now? Having to wall those pieces of ourselves off to try to fit into an environment creates a sense of isolation and loneliness and disconnection, which is really the main part of why I'm here doing the podcast, is I felt like doing this kind of trauma work is isolating. Like, I don't know who to share it with. I don't know who's ready to hear it, who can deal with it, who has the bandwidth, who's dealing with their own stuff that they're masking. And I don't have the bandwidth to trigger someone else and then be responsible for, whoops, I like set off a landmine over where they are. I better attend to that and stuff my stuff back in the box. It's tricky connecting through trauma, without having to mask it. And it does create like a sense of disconnection.
Yeah, I think some parts of that is, if we kind of connect back to breath work, is sometimes I feel like when we repeat our stories, we get stuck in them. And so if we're saying it over and over and over again, some people, especially in the grief and loss world, will let someone tell their story until they're done saying it, like until they're through it, which to some degree, I'm like, yes, that's true. Like, you don't want to force someone through their trauma. However, if they're just saying the same story over and over again, then are they not just living in their trauma? And so how do and that's kind of like the balance of how can we help or support people shifting through? Because I feel like a lot of the work that can help with whatever you call it, healing, transforming, transcending pain, grief, trauma, is that peer support and connection with others. Because when I think about when someone goes to therapy or has a life coach or talks with a friend, it's one-on-one. And it's almost like it's still a secret because you're telling one person so you feel better. But then there's sometimes, depending on the environment, you're still hiding it, so to speak, right? Even though you've talked with it and you feel good about it, but there's still kind of that disconnect, that mask that we wear in front of other people. And so I think groups can often help normalize like other people going through similar things, and again, kind of just allowing it to go away on its own.
Yeah. And with a background in social work and psychotherapy, and then turning to somatic breath work, what did you find in breath work that was missing in everything that led up to that?
So for me, I think it kind of ties in with the book, The Body Keeps the Score, is because by the time I got certified for breathwork, I was just over 2 decades in my grief. And so I did the support groups, I did the conferences, I became a social worker, I learned more, I love learning all that I can about mental health and supporting people. And I think that's a part, like sometimes education is something that's helpful for us to better understand ourselves. And then breathwork again kind of was that thing where in the sixth or seventh session that I did, it was like I instantly thought of my sister and then just started crying throughout the session for the first half. And so working with people, I've noticed that after they're done with the session, they're like, I feel better. As weird as that is to sum it down just to that, it's like they were able to connect with the things that they were holding in their body, whether it was like guilt or shame. And oftentimes people have light tears. And it's amazing how it's like you could do like one breathwork session and connect with yourself more than you can in a therapy session or talking with a friend, because it's kind of like we're talking, so we're in our head space, which is still disconnected from our bodies, versus doing breath work, which allows you to be in your body and allows the body just to naturally process what's in it, the gunk, the stress, the tension. When I did a session with Jenny, she talked about having some shoulder pain, and she went to go see, I think, a physical therapist or a chiropractor. And although I will have to say breathwork and myself, I'm not a medical person, so I'm not making claims about how breathwork can get rid of pain. However, in her example, she was having issues moving her shoulder, and after one session, she felt relief and she could move her shoulder and it didn't hurt, right? So it's just amazing how these simple practices of focusing on our breath and connecting with our bodies can help release what we're holding in our bodies.
Yeah, and trauma shows up in so many different ways. It can be overwhelming to just try and recognize how far-reaching something is when it seems like it shouldn't be, like the chronic tension in the body as a result of bracing for impact, bracing for emotional impact with physical stress. Like my neck, shoulders, lower back are my chronic pain areas, and I'll get so tense that I am like pounding, incapacitating migraines and tension headaches. And I never know when that's going to hit because my body just carries that tension all the time. And then when it's had enough, it's had enough. And it peaks, and I medicate and rest and do all the things that I have to do to get through that and recover. But there's no cause. There's no stimulus for that. It's not like I'm allergic to something I ate and I'm having a symptom. I just have aftershocks of symptom attacks in the middle of nowhere. So, it'd be interesting to see what breath work could do with that kind of carried tension that I'm used to. This feels normal in my body now.
Yep. And I feel like the tricky part is because we go through life carrying stress. And then, I've even said this before where it's like, oh, like we're like Olympic weightlifters in stress because we just learn to live with it. And then we're like, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. This is just my life. This is just how it's supposed to be. And then you find that one thing. So oftentimes, like when I talk with people, it's like find what works for you, but also be open to just trying something you wouldn't, even if it's like yoga, breath work, Reiki, acupuncture. Like just try it. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then you don't have to do it anymore. Try therapy, a life coach, go to a support group. There is no magic pill that's going to get rid of our trauma and our pain, but it's kind of like the little things that we put ourselves out there. Now, the opposite side is that sometimes it's exhausting. Like you'd be like, I've been trying to heal and nothing's working, and I've been to 10 therapists, or I've done five support groups. And I think that's kind of the hard part. You don't always have to do the work. Like it's okay just to, live your life and just be. And then when you feel like you're like, okay, now I want to change, okay, then try something. Like finding the things that work for you because you never know.
And you and I came, like, we approached our trauma from opposite ends of the spectrum. So you learned, you became a social worker, you dug into therapy, you educated yourself about grief and trauma. I mean, you're citing Gabor Mate, who I recently just discovered. He's brilliant. The Body Keeps the Score, which, to be fair, I tried to read and couldn't get into, and it's still sitting on a bookshelf. You devoured it in 2 days. And 20 years later, you turned to somatic breath work and more experiential types of work. I started in the personal development sphere, in the like transformational space, like inventing, creating, like really pulling apart those memories of what things looked like and getting down to just the facts of what occurred. And how my experience of that, my interpretation, the way it felt over here was essentially on me. Like I felt that way. I created this belief about myself or about the world or about this relationship or about that person, and trying to, let go of those manufactured parts of that history. And 20 years later, I turned to medication, professional therapy. I was exhausted from the constant work of assessing and reconstructing my emotions, so that I could function. Like that one tool was supposed to fix it. It was supposed to be enough. And I was just fucking tired. And rather than giving up and falling into a black pit, I gave up and I fell into the VA. And I was sharing with somebody, I think yesterday, about this. The military is where a lot of my trauma comes from. There's the trauma of growing up different, queer, and coming out and all of that stuff, and living through having to rewrite who I know myself to be and shake off all of what I thought it meant to be gay and discover what it means for me. There's family stuff that happened just to me and my siblings. There's the inherited generations of trauma that came down to deal with. But all of that kind of became unmanageable after deploying with the army. And so it was like turning to my aggressor for support. Like walking into the VA felt like going back to the government for help dealing with the trauma that the government dealt me. And going to who victimized me for support in dealing with the impact was rough. And it let me take all of the, turning to post-traumatic stress certified therapists and psychologists and getting into pharmaceuticals and figuring all that stuff out, felt like a failure from the transformational background, right? Because that one tool was supposed to be enough, right? I was supposed to be done, like I did my work, I should be good now, right? And stepping out of feeling like what I've already done should be enough and being willing to try the next thing when I was just exhausted. Like I've been using the tools I have and I'm exhausted. And just surrendering to being willing to try something else that I didn't want, but I needed something. And I just latched on to something, and there's value in it. So, breath work might sound a little woo-woo for some people.
Yeah.
How do you, how what would you say for someone who comes from a scientific background or a very heady space around dealing with trauma about the value of exploring breath work to see what it could open up for them?
Yeah, so I would recommend the book called Breath by James Nestor. He did a lot of research that kind of backs how important it is to breathe. And I think we all instinctually know that, right? Like without breathing, we'd be dead. So we need to breathe. Like it's a function that we need to be able to live. And I think when people are like, oh, it's woo-woo, like for me, I was raised Catholic, but I don't identify as Catholic, and I wouldn't say I'm atheist or agnostic, or am I necessarily a fully spiritual person. So when I do breath work, it's not for any woo-woo stuff, right? So I think in that atmosphere, there are people, right, who will be in the woo arena, spiritual, and do breath work. And then there are other people who don't, right? Because they like, again, for me, it's something that's natural, right? But the difference is from breathing and breath work, right? Although they're similar words, they're different, right? Breathing is something we automatically do. Breath work is intentionally focusing on our breath, which helps us to tap into our nervous system, right? So we can talk about go into the fight or flight system, how we don't really have control over that. But we really do, right? We can't control how we have the instant reaction. So if someone jumps out at you might scream, you might tense up, you might even punch someone, right? There are different reactions for different people. When it comes to breath work, it gives you the ability to either go into the feelings that come up. So, if you have tension or stress in the body, being able to be like, okay, I'm just going to breathe through what this is without trying to name it, without trying to give it an explanation or a story, and using the breath to expand yourself, right? So when we talk about trauma, like grief and trauma, our bodies often contract, right? Because we're having these grief reminders or triggers or emotional reactions to the things we see, the things we hear, the things we smell. And our bodies are always tensing up. So we're kind of always in this contracted state, right? And so breath work is something that allows us to gently expand our bodies so that it helps the stress and the tension and the junk to melt away naturally.
Good. So while we can't really control the default system-generated instantaneous response, we can master noticing that arise and interceding and returning to a state where we're more in control, more at choice about the way we react. Was that what you're pointing toward?
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note that there are times where we need to intentionally activate our stress because a lot of therapy and tools will teach you to calm down, calm your nervous system, get you relaxed and grounded, which is great, but then you're also, in some ways, potentially suppressing something else. Versus allowing it to happen and feeling what you feel so that the body can go through what it needs to. And one of the videos that was shown when I got certified in somatic breath work was for a antelope, I believe, that got caught by a lion or a cheetah, but it played dead. And so the predator just went away, even though it wasn't dead. So when you think about that kind of trauma, like literally like this animal was about to die, it learned that if I play dead, the predator will leave. And then after the predator leaves, you see the antelope kind of get up and then it literally like shakes its body. And so it's kind of like shaking the trauma off, right? And so that's kind of like for me how like breath work is, you can use it to calm yourself down, but then again, how can you activate it so that you can allow the body to get rid of that stress, that tension that can come from trauma?
For sure. And so the freeze response is very familiar. It's part of what I'm personally grappling with at the moment. And I love what you're saying about the opposite of like calming and centering and chilling yourself. Because when we learn that as a response, it sometimes doesn't serve us. Sometimes the predator doesn't leave when you calm down, becoming quiet and still and compliant doesn't get you out of every mess. So, having the ability to activate the emergency system to let the fear and anger have its voice and take your arms and legs and your voice and do what it needs to do to protect yourself. Relearning that is so challenging. How does breath work get at that kind of, like, I don't know, I want to say reprogramming, but that's not quite right.
I think that it's a part of our body's natural system. So like when we think about animals, like animals have that way of not always, now they might always be kind of reactive, right? So they might be fleeing and, running all the time from predators, but we don't see necessarily these animals isolating and not being in their packs or with other groups of animals, right? And so when I think about breath work and how we've always had it, And it's been around for a very long time. So you could look now and there aren't as many studies as people would like of having evidence-based and like, but it's like cultures have used breathing and singing and dancing and shaking for centuries or millennia, right? But it seems maybe too good to be true, or it's too simple that it can't be that easy because we have these advanced therapies and EMDR and brain spotting. And again, these are great because they might work for some people, but they're not going to work for everyone. I know people who have had great experiences with EMDR, and I know that people have had negative experiences with EMDR. And I don't want to knock it because, again, it works for some people, but not for everyone. And breathwork is the most natural thing that we have. And so, why not utilize it to, again, tap into our nervous system? When we inhale, our heart rate increases. And when we exhale, it decreases. And so, when you create a rhythm, and it doesn't have to be fast, but if you create a rhythm where your breath is connected, it allows you to kind of cycle through and speed up your heart just enough so that it's, again, it's moving the blood cells in the body, and it's almost like an internal cleanse. Versus when you breathe slower, longer exhales, you're activating your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest or digest. And so it's slowing things down. And so that's why it's important, is because sometimes we always slow things down, versus there are some times where we need to speed things up so we can get it out, versus I'm going to relax and keep this feeling in my body. Versus, like you said, if it's anger, if it's fear, if it's anxiety, allowing it to cycle through, feeling it, and then letting the body release the stress or tension.
Yeah. And you said, I'm going to relax and keep this feeling in my body. And I feel like so much of what I missed in my own work was I felt like I'm going to relax was a way to bypass the feeling in my body. But what actually happened is that thing just got stored. I got postponed, like my dealing with it, the emotional, physical, internal reaction of it just got delayed over and over and over and over again. So that calm and center and step out of my response into a space of peacefulness and clarity, all of the emergency response that I stepped out of, it didn't just go away. So I'm starting to really dig this imagery you're using about the cleansing, like using breath to cleanse, to flush out the stuff that I choked down and held on to unintentionally. I didn't think I was just storing it for later, but here I am with an enhanced freeze response and starting to learn what that looks like. Like, as I'm now taking the education track that you started with, that freezing sometimes gets mistaken for procrastination. Freezing shows up in all these different ways that's not just an immediate disruption and startle. So, breaking up those pieces of what we've held on to and avoided allowing it to actually run its course when it was needed.
Yeah.
Very cool. So tell me a little bit about Embrace the Darkness LLC. That's your company, yeah?
Yeah, I wanted something that was different because I feel like in everything that we have, it's always like embrace the light, think of the positives. And just as our conversation led to, similar to when people feel guilt or shame, these are natural feelings to have. And when we push those away, again, we're pushing, they're still a part of us, they're our feelings. And so if we're pushing those feelings away, or anger, or whatever it might be, anxiety, then we're still pushing a part of ourselves away instead of kind of integrating, like, no, these are normal, they're a part of me, and it's my current reaction. And so embrace the darkness for me is more about embracing all that you are, even what we might consider as that's the bad part of me. And it's like, well, then if we have then we're calling ourselves bad versus it being the experience. Maybe we had a bad experience, but that doesn't make you a bad person. So how can you integrate being all that you are? Good, bad, ugly, messy, happy, whatever it might be.
Yeah. You're bringing Carl Jung to mind, like the shadow presence, doing your shadow work, like looking at the pieces of ourselves that we villainize, and starting to recognize that those automated defense systems or those emotional surges are intended for something valuable. And sometime, often, if we notice them, it's because we're not pleased with the way they showed up. And that's part of the regulated internal nervous system that accompanies lingering trauma. But the emotional surge has value when it's occurring in the right place and in the right time. So, trying to purge those parts of ourselves that often show up inconveniently, we wind up trying to purge something that actually belongs to us, that has a valid purpose in the right scenario. So there's really something powerful that you're pointing to about embracing that darkness and really leaning into those places where we're most embarrassed or ashamed of the way we are, where we feel like we should be some other way. Where we feel like we should be done talking about this trauma. And we should be done. Why is this incident still coming forward 20 years later? Like, come on, haven't I done enough? Yeah, it's never gonna not be part of who I am. I'll never not have this inside me. And perhaps I have a say over my relationship to it and how it shows up and how I relate to myself when it shows up and what I do about it. Maybe I learn to breathe into it through it rather than release the reins and get trampled by my emotions and just let it all explode all over wherever, or stuff it down. There could be riding that wild stallion to the right destination when it shows up.
Yeah. And I also think that these conversations are important, and talking about it does still help because it helps us to better understand ourselves when we are able to tell our story the way that we want to versus being stuck in the story and saying the same thing over and over again versus what can we learn? Like, how can we grow from our story?
Yeah. Very cool. So, how do we find more of you if we're interested in breath work or just finding out more about like you and like what you have to offer? I understand you have a gift for the audience. Do you want to let us know how to get some more of this awesome stuff?
Yeah, so my website is embracethedarkness.org. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. And in the show notes, I'm sure there'll be the link for it's a free 5-minute download for somatic breathwork practice in an audio form. So you can do it sitting down, you can lie down, you can try both and see what works best for you. And it's short and it's quick, right? You can do it in the morning. You can do it post lunch when you get the lunch tiredness. It's 2 o'clock and you're like, I just had lunch and I feel like I need some energy. Sometimes breath work can give you that little boost of natural energy without running to the caffeine, which I would have to say I'm pretty bad because I like me some coffee. Even at 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon sometimes.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I love that we're having this kind of conversation and making this connection. I'm sure I'll see more of you, and the podcast will see more of you in the future. And if you're interested in breath work or finding out more about it, please reach out to Steven Stott. All of the social media links and that free 5-minute breathwork download will be in the show notes. So thank you so much for being here, and I'm excited to see where this leads.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate being on the show.
All right, we'll see y'all next time.